This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
And he was the founder of this and the CEO of the largest wholesale travel company in the U.S. And he brought me into his company, and it was, we didn't call it an incubator, but that's right. What it was. So I had my own little startup company. My design team, product team, marketing team, engineers, developers, call center, like everything other than HR and accounting that I got the services from the bigger company, I had my own team. And
so he funded the project. His company funded the project.
So, okay.
And wholesale travel is what? You're selling? Yeah, explain that to me.
Yeah, nobody knows what that
is. I know what retail travel is. My mom used to be a travel agent, but yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, everybody knows either travel agents or the what's called OTAs, the online travel agencies, Expedia, yeah. Booking, Priceline, right. Et cetera. Which, by the way, what nobody knows, it's that all of those are two companies.
They're all owned by two companies, just like
all owned by
like General companies. Motors. They got 27 brands.
Well, yes.
Not now, so but they used to. Yeah.
You go on Kayak like, oh, I'm this avid traveler. I know how to shop around.
Right.
But all the people you shop around through are two companies, which is either Booking or Expedia.
So they're basically all going into the same portal.
No, but in the back end, it's all
the back end. Yeah. Behind.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And it. even the
data is coming from two companies,
quote unquote, comparison engine, right? You go to Kayak or Trivago.
Yeah.
Kayak is owned by one of the companies as Trivago is owned by the other.
That's funny. That's not surprising though.
Yeah, but nobody knows it. People think, right, like, of course. Oh, I go and I shop around and
no,
I find
it's like the eyeglass like industry. I think like one or two companies own 95% of the business and you think there's all these companies.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview. Today's a special episode. I'm joined by my good friend Isar Metis from Florida. He is the host of the E-Tribe podcast and a serial entrepreneur. This is the first collaborative episode that I've ever done. We got a bunch more coming out with other podcast hosts and podcast shows, but this is a collaborative episode. So it's been released on the E-Tribe podcast platform as well as with the Accidental Entrepreneur. You can listen to me sharing my background and stories and experiences, as well as Isar sharing his. So I hope you enjoy today's episode.
And I have I have a new surprise because I have we have a dog that
a dog
yesterday,
a puppy. Like,
she's not a puppy, but she's she came from a shelter and she's a little scared from her own shadow.
Yeah,
and like today I'm recording the podcast and she started barking. I'm like, oh, she can bark. Like I didn't hear her. I didn't hear her.
What kind of dog before. Is she?
Something, you know, she's beautiful. Like she has a gorgeous brown color. She looks like, I literally want to call her espresso because she looks
oh,
like
nice
espresso,
color.
But yeah, beautiful deep brown. And she's sweet. She's just, I think she's just terrified from the whole, she was moved there and then moved here.
Yeah,
and
no, it's separate, a, you got so. A big heart taking on a, you know, a shelter dog. That's good.
She'll be good.
Yeah, good. All right. Well, I would welcome you to my show, but you're kind of welcoming me to your show. So we're doing, this is the joint Accidental Entrepreneur in the E-Tribe podcast collaborative episode.
Yes, it's my first ever doing this. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, well, you know, we're just...
You're my first, Mitch.
I don't want to put that out there, you know?
Yeah, no, it's not that kind of show, guys, if you thought that's...
Oh, boy. Well, I guess you should go first. You go first. Talk about, you know, your background, where you're from. I could tell with your Brooklyn accent that you're, you know, you're from Brooklyn. And you could talk about that. And, and then I'll talk a little bit about my practice and my background. And then we can get into talking about some stuff.
Cool. So my Brooklyn accent is from Israel. That's where I grew up. I spent my first 30 years over there. Between the age of 18 and 28, I flew F-16s for the Air Force. And the last 2 years actually of that, I also was an instructor for the Israeli Air Force Academy.
Right.
And then I joined a small Israeli startup that did training and simulation solutions for military and then a lot of other things.
And with
that
military startup, still military service is still required for all kids.
Yes,
when they
it's
turn
mandatory
18, like
female,
or something.
Female and male. So everybody joins at 18. Girls do, it changes all the time, but women do about 2 years and men do about three. And obviously if you are like a pilot, then they sign you up for like a minimum of 10 years and then you can stay longer and retire at like 42.
Okay.
When you're 18 seems like so old. And
right.
Like,
you go,
you like, idiot. You could have been been in retirement for like 10 years now, but
that's probably true. Yeah. My parents have a lot of friends who've lost children in the military, not even in combat.
Yeah.
They have one friend who lost three kids in a transport.
Oh my God.
And the helicopter crashed. They're from Tel Aviv. Yeah.
Sad. Oh yeah. I remember that.
Tough event. Life over there. Yeah.
That was a bad event.
Yeah. So I promised we promised our rabbi that we would get to Israel. My wife's never been there. I've probably been there a dozen times. And we have not kept that promise.
You should.
Yet. I know. Well, we intended Phenomenal. To, but life kind of got in the way. And now they're not taking us now. So
I know. Yeah. Now they're not taking me.
Right. You can't
even
go back.
Now they're not taking anybody.
Yeah. You're all contaminated. So
So then I joined that startup. With that startup, I came to the US. We opened a subsidiary here, just four of us. So it was the CEO, the CTO, myself, as you know, it's a small startup. I was sales, business development, marketing, anything that brought customers through the door, and the guy that was in charge of training. We all moved here.
And what did the company do?
Training and simulation. So we built a training and simulation development platform for other companies. So it's like a white labeled solution that we enabled other companies to develop their own training and simulation solutions for their needs.
Depending on whatever their needs were, like a Salesforce or a...
No. So it was training for military purposes. So our biggest first contract, that's why we moved to Florida, was with Lockheed Martin here in Orlando, which is a funny story by itself because you're a foreign national working. I had an office at Lockheed. So I had this big red badge that I could wear only for like from the entrance to my office to the bathroom. And if anybody saw me out of that perimeter, they could shoot me or something like this.
I don't think that's true, but
I never tested that. I don't know.
So you guys were making training systems that you would sell to Lockheed, and then Lockheed would use it to teach the military pilots how to use their planes.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Exactly. I understood that. Look at that.
Yeah. You see?
Okay. So what other applications was it used for? Now, I mean, jets are obvious, right? So
we really started with jets because most of the leadership of the company was fighter pilots. So that was kind of how
that
started.
Makes sense. Yeah.
But then it ventured off to so many different things, from command and control systems to control tower operators to special forces, collaboration between teams, just coordinating a mission to, and then we did as we grew and the system became better, we start doing really strange things because it's a platform that is built for partnerships.
Yeah.
So we had a partnership with a company that used it for dental training, like dentists.
Okay.
And then crane operators, like the big, huge, gigantic ones.
Yeah, right. The big ones.
And then
so it was a pretty flexible platform. It could be designed to teach anybody.
Yeah, so it was really, the goal was to create a platform that is like the, you know, word processing of training and simulation, right? So you can build your own simulation. You can build your own lessons on top of the simulation. And you can connect that with a system that will track your progress and will customize the lessons as you progress.
Okay, so the original customers were private military contractors.
Yes.
People that did business with the government.
Yes.
And then eventually, like, let's use the crane example, right? A guy could be in a simulation operating one of those giant cranes, like the one you see in Dubai, right? Along huge cranes, right?
Exactly.
So as opposed to being in the crane and getting trained and killing people, you like flight simulators, you could screw up and everybody be safe.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And I guess dentists is good, right? This way you don't screw up people's mouths. In dental school, they get people to volunteer and you get free dental work, but they could screw you up.
Yeah. So it was really cool. The company that bought our systems, they had this tactile device that was kind of like a dentist drill that was connected to these wires. So it could give you the feeling as if it's touching something and the consistency of it without it really touching anything. It just was those three or four wires it connected to gave it the feeling as if there's resistance on the other end of it.
Right. And the mouth you're looking at is on a screen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
so
not
we
a real...
gave them the screen to look at the thing. And it was really interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah,
and then cool you device. Guys sold that company or is it still around or?
No, it's still around. I left there because it was a very small company with a very low glass ceiling.
Right.
And I left and did an executive MBA.
Okay.
And from the executive MBA, I started my own startup. And
you're in Florida, right? So this was all in Florida? You stayed in Florida ever since you got there?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
where'd you do your
MBA? Sad, I know.
Well, yeah, my wife's from South Florida, so I can't take too much, except I'm always criticizing her. Every time you hear about some wacky stuff, a crazy person, they're 9 times out of 10, they're from Florida. I have no idea.
The heat and humidity will get you even if you're a normal person.
Yeah, I think if you look at a map, everybody kind of drains down that way. So I don't know if that has something to do with it. So you got your MBA at night while you were working or did you go back?
Yeah, I was working full time and doing this on Friday and Saturday. So every other Friday, every other Saturday.
Okay.
And did the MBA, finished the MBA. I started my own startup company.
Okay.
Was kind of like
what did that do?
Affiliate marketing, not exactly, but kind of. If you want later on, we can dive into that.
Yeah, I'd like to know more about it because I think that's a good way for people to get started in business when they have no money. They don't know what the hell to do.
No, so I was okay. It's we'll get to it later. And then from that, my main investor basically said, "Listen, I really like you. I like what you're doing. I want you to kind of do something similar within my company." And he was the founder of this and the CEO of the largest wholesale travel company in the US. And he brought me into his company and we didn't call it an incubator, but that's what it was. So I had my own little startup company, my design team, product team, marketing team, engineers, developers, call center, like everything other than HR and accounting that I got the services from the bigger company. I had my own team and
so he funded the project. His company funded the project.
So, okay.
And wholesale travel is what you're selling. Yeah. Explain that to me.
Yeah. Nobody knows what that
is. I know what retail travel is. My mom used to be a travel agent, but yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody knows either travel agents or what's called OTAs, the online travel agencies, Expedia, Booking, Priceline, et cetera. Which by the way, what nobody knows, it's that all of those are two companies.
They're all owned by two companies, just like
all owned by
like General
companies.
Motors. They got 27 brands.
Well, yes.
Not now, so but they used to. Yeah.
You go on Kayak like, oh, I'm this avid traveler. I know how to shop around.
Right.
But all the people you shop around through are two companies, which is either Booking or Expedia.
So they're basically all going into the same portal.
No, but in the back end, it's all
the back end. Yeah. Behind.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And even the
data is coming from two companies.
The quote unquote comparison engine, right? You go to Kayak or Trivago.
Yeah.
Kayak is owned by one of the companies, as Trivago is owned by the other.
That's funny. That's not surprising, though.
Yeah, but nobody knows it. People think, right, like, of course. Oh, I go and I shop around and
no,
I find
like
great deals.
It's like the eyeglass industry.
Yeah.
I think like one or two companies own 95% of the business, and you think there's all these companies. Yeah.
Yeah. Mattresses right, okay. are the same thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. They have all these brands, and they're really yeah. just like two companies, three companies. Yeah. yeah.
So I was like one of the only independents. And so it was interesting. I developed a... So you asked what wholesale is actually.
Yeah, because how do you compete with these behemoths, right?
So the wholesale world was really the only thing they didn't take over yet.
Okay.
Yet
okay.
is, I think, an important aspect of this. But we had an army of people, literally, globally, that went and signed direct contracts with the owners of mostly hotels, but also cruise lines and local attraction operators and stuff like that.
Okay.
And we sold it to tour operators, privately owned travel agencies, et cetera. So companies from sizes in the billions to companies in the size of, you know, a couple of million, which is probably the smallest travel agency you can have and still make a living, and anything in between. So local distribution and so on. But we had the people who actually got the product on the shelf, if you want, and we sold it over to other people.
So you're buying it in quantity at a discount, like let's say rooms from Marriott worldwide at under some contract or package.
So it's not even Marriott. I would go. So as you know, Marriott is 98% franchised.
Right.
There is no Marriott. They don't own hotels. So you go to the guy that owns the hotel and you sign the deal with him.
Right. So he's got rooms and he wants to fill up his hotel. It's not always full, right? So you're buying kind of the leftover rooms. You don't really know even what's left over. There's no
there is no leftover. There's no such thing, right?
Right,
so it's
exactly.
We buy, so let's say you had 120 rooms. He's like, okay, I know Expedia and Booking are going to give me 50. I know Marriott is going to give me another 20. So I got 70, but I have 120 rooms. And how do I sell the rest? And there's a few avenues, but probably the biggest one after the OTAs is, after the OTAs and the brand, right, the Marriott of the world, would have been wholesale. And there were really three really big players in that market, us in the US and two other European companies. And what happened in the end is one big private equity company went and bought all three.
Oh, okay.
And it was a merger from hell, and sometime into that hell, I left.
Okay. Yeah, those mergers usually don't.
Yeah.
So many hands in the pot. But so you're basically doing the same thing that the OTAs are doing, but you're not selling to the consumer. You're selling to a large tour operator. You're selling to corporations in large blocks, right?
So the company as a whole, that's what they did. What I did was compete with the OTAs. But since I knew I cannot compete with the OTAs, because again, just to put things in perspective, because people don't understand the magnitude of this thing.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, these two companies control everything. 2 years ago, because again, last year, I don't know the numbers, and this year, obviously, it doesn't matter because nobody traveled.
Right.
But 2 years ago, each and every one of those gigantic corporations, again, owns every brand.
Yeah, you're
talking
billions of dollars, right?
They each spend $2.7 billion in marketing.
Just in marketing. Yeah, I'm so like, it's hundreds of billions of dollars. Yeah, right.
So you can't, there's no way you can do anything because the it's not even cents on the dollar that you have to go. And I had a very good marketing budget. I know a lot of people that will kill to $4 to $5 million a year in marketing.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
But it's, again,
not 2.7 like billion, whatever you
each.
Said.
So you're talking about
five plus,
point something
that
you need to compete. So I'm like, I knew that's not going to work. So what we developed a white label platform, again, so I can give it to other companies. Anybody who wanted to have travel can have a travel solution with a membership area that they can give discounted prices behind closed doors. And we developed a very good solution for that. And that allowed us to grow like my little side of the bigger company to $100 million a year.
Which is really just a blip in the whole industry, even though it's
a large number. Even in my company, you know, it's one of those funny things that, you know, I came, the startup company did, you know, $5 to $6 million a year. And suddenly I'm doing 30, 40, 60, 80. And I'm like, oh my God, we're doing. And everybody's like, just shut up. I mean, don't even mention this.
You're not even important to them.
We don't care.
Right.
Like, as long as you're profitable, do your thing. It's fine. It's okay. But don't expect us to be excited about $60 million.
That's funny. But everything's relative, right? Everything's relative to the world in which you live. So, okay. So you exited that out, you said, a couple of years ago?
Yeah. So 3 years ago, I'm trying to think. Yeah. 2.5 years ago, I think the actual thing was signed. And then the merger happened. And then we went through that. And then I wanted to leave, and because they chose me and my team, and I had an incredible, incredible team of people working with me, we won a very long process. I'm going to save you make a long story short. We won to be the e-commerce solution for the joint new company. But then they said, but you can't run it the way you were running it before, like a little startup. Your marketing people need to report to marketing, your developers to IT, this to that.
Right.
I'm like, but so why the hell did
you choose? All the creativity goes away, right?
No, I'm like, you chose me because I had something special and now you want this to go away. So I'm out. I said, well, you can't be out because we chose you. I'm like, okay, but that's not what I enjoy doing. I enjoy this whole startup thing and that's what I'm good at. And that's what my team's good at.
Right.
Like, yeah. So long story short, I hate burning bridges, and it was a great learning opportunity for me as well. So I stayed from the moment I quote unquote resigned, I stayed for 9 months.
Okay.
And I set up the new structure and the new procedures and the new connections with 750 other departments that were in this new big company. And hired a replacement and trained him, and then I left. So, and then I got to the really interesting chapter, which is what I'm doing right now, which I really started by, okay, now I'm going to take some time off and do nothing, which I don't know how to do.
So yeah, then nothing doesn't last very long.
I started investing and consulting and mentoring and being on boards and started the podcast, and that led to the business that I'm starting now. And but let's talk about that later. I want to hear your story.
My story is not as exciting. I grew up in New Jersey. I've been to Israel, but I haven't lived in Israel. I went to, I was always like an entrepreneur when I was younger. I always had little startup businesses. I never really had a job where I would like work for the summer for a company or an intern. I did a little bit of that coming out of law school, but for the most part, every summer I was developing some sort of a business. I had a detailing business. I was in the heist, you know, we used to wax cars, and some of that was accidental, ironically, because my uncle was like, listen, can you like wax my car? And I'm like, sure, I'll come to your house. No, I can't. I'm a lawyer. I work too much. Come to my office and do it in the parking lot. I'm like, how am I going to do that? So I came there with a friend, and we got buckets. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. And it was around the time, I don't know if, let's see, this was like in 84. So you probably weren't even here yet. And right?
No.
Yeah.
No. So, I came here in 2004.
Yeah. Okay. So years later. So at the time, the thing was like everybody was detailing cars. It was more than just washing your car. You would clean the vents with Q-tips, and you would wax the car, and you polish the whole thing up. I mean, everybody was into it, and all the detailing shops were opening up, and it was this big thing. So I was like, well, I can do this. So we were in the parking lot that day, and next thing I know, everybody in the building's like, hey, well, could you do my car? And when you do, and then we realized that if we raised the price, we would only get like the cleaner cars. We wouldn't get the really crappy cars, because that was a lot of work. So you don't want to do that. And then eventually I got a distributor. A guy provided us with, he used to drop stuff at my house, like wax materials and leather treatments and, you know, tire stuff. And I sold the company. It wasn't for millions of dollars, but it was $10,000 or $15,000 I sold the company for. To a friend's son. And the funny thing was, I think the next summer he drove someone's Porsche like through the back wall of someone's garage. Oh. He put it into drive instead of reverse. And I was like, oops. So if I remember it right. So that was like, so I used to do all that kind of stuff, like little businesses. And then I went to school because, you know, I'm a Jewish kid in New Jersey, a grandmother.
Of course. You got to be either a doctor or a lawyer. Like, right. You don't have much of a choice.
Exactly. But at that point, I didn't know that. And my dad was an insurance salesman all of his life. When I think my mom was pregnant with me. He was working for a shoe store chain that's now gone. He would have been Al Bundy, if you know what Married with Children is.
Of course I do.
So, but he went to buy life insurance for his pregnant wife. And he met this guy and started talking to him. And he was always outgoing. And he's like, I want to learn about your business. So he spent his entire career since 1965 in the life insurance and health insurance business.
Interesting.
So I always grew up in a world where don't work for anybody. You know, don't work hourly, don't get a paycheck. You got to work in commission. So that was always the way I looked at it. And so then when I was in law school, no, I was in college. I think it was like, it must have been my junior year. End of my junior year, you're like, well, what are you going to do with your life? And I was like, I don't know. Well, why don't you get your MBA? I don't want to get my MBA. I'm going to go work for corporations. You're not going to do that. So my grandmother had been begging me to go to law school. Go to law school. Says anything you do, you should learn the law. You should go to law school. So my a buddy of mine, who was probably drunk at the time, was like, I'm going to go to law school. So I said, okay, I'll go to law school too. Now, of course, 2 weeks later, he sobered up and he's like, I'm not going to law school. He's in real estate now, actually, development and stuff. So I decided, was I just doing it because we were drunk and kidding around, or do I really want to go to law school when my grandma told me and everything? So I decided.
I got to pause you for a second. So we host a lot of our house, like a lot, and a lot of people.
Yeah.
We have this wooden plaque that we put next to the bar. It's in the bar usually, but we pull it out that says alcohol, because no good story started with we were having a salad. Right.
That's a good, so oh, you got to send, like, got to find where you got that. I got to get that. We have one of those that says football. The only good time is football season and waiting for football season. But, but that's a good one. So it's true, right? So anyway, obviously I decided, okay, I'll go to law school. And because I didn't know what the hell else I was going to do. I just wasn't ready to go work somewhere. I guess I could have. Yep. So I went to law school, but I've always been more of an entrepreneur than a lawyer. It's always been my problem. So I never went into corporate law. I never went into big corporations, which I'm probably happier about now anyway. And was always involved in deals. I got into real estate and I was doing real estate deals for people and getting pieces of the action. We were foreclosing on properties and doing all kinds of stuff in development. I've learned, you know, all the due diligence that goes with it. And then over time I started, not that coaching is the wrong word. I started advising people, noticing that most of them don't have business plans, helping them do it, you know, helping them raise money, reviewing deals. I have doctors who were like, hey, listen, my friend Isar came to me. Now he wants $250,000 for this medical device company. Okay, well, what are you going to do? Well, I gave him the money, but can you look at this piece of you already gave him the money? Okay. So I have, you know, a lot of those that I consult with. And just over the years, I've worked for insurance companies and worked in the financial planning business and done estate planning and all that kind of stuff. So it's not that exciting, but it's brought me to where I am today. And then 2 years ago, I was listening to podcasts, you know, like just like you do. And there was a lot of guys that were lawyers and they're like, they have podcasts. And I'm like, really? You can have like a podcast? You don't need like a studio and like a staff? Yeah, you could do it out of your kitchen. So I got some crappy equipment, which sounds better now because I have better equipment, and started interviewing people. And now I'm, 175 episodes in? I don't know. And then I met you through Podmax Global.
Yeah.
I was on their show on Wednesday, On Air Brands, with Eric and Josh. And
Eric Herbal.
Yeah, it was fun.
They're always fun. They're a great bunch of people.
They are great guys. I just connected them with, I interviewed before this, the president of the One Thing, you know, Gary Keller's book, Keller Williams. It's called The One Thing. Yeah. Well, they've made it into a company. And this guy's the president of the company. I can't for the life of me figure out how we connected. He didn't know either, but I interviewed him and I'm connecting him with Josh and Eric. Are you going to Podmax next week?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, good. Well, this won't come out before that, but yeah, we'll be there and we'll see. We'll meet some neat people.
So I'm going to, I love how come you ended up on this note. And I want to ask you a question because I think it will be very, very interesting to a lot of people who are listening to this.
Okay.
What do you get out of it, right?
Because out of what?
Okay. So you're a lawyer. Yeah. You have a lot of experience. You have a lot of contacts. You've done different aspects of the law. You're an entrepreneur by heart, so you easily can help people with understanding the concepts of the business while taking law into consideration, which is brilliant. Why the hell do you need a podcast? That's kind of my question.
Because I enjoy doing it. I mean, I like if you're going to make content, right? If you're going to be a content marketer, I don't like to write. I mean, I write contracts for a living. I don't want to write blogs. I'm writing a book right now with a friend of mine. It's called 10 ways to get sued. No. Yeah. 10 ways to get sued by anyone and everyone. And it's not a book about getting sued. Obviously it's a book about avoiding getting sued.
If
it wasn't for Barry, who's helping me write the book, I mean, it's painful now. If I was doing this on my own, it would never happen. So it's just my way of producing content. I mean, would I love it to be like I could be a podcast host for the rest of my life and make money like Joe Rogan? Sure. But that's not going to happen. So I enjoy like you and I met. We're having this, you know, collaborative episode, and I met this other guy earlier, and I just meet a lot of interesting people, and it's fun to talk with them and ask them their stories, and their stories are interesting. Your story is interesting, more interesting than my story. So I find that other people's lives are more interesting than me. So therefore I can interview them and we can keep moving forward. And then eventually people will learn how to better run their businesses and maybe they'll hire me and I'll be happy. And now if you came to me, right, and you said, Mitch, listen, I got these guys together. We're buying a company. It's a $20 million purchase. You know, we need a general counsel as part of our C-suite. We're going to move you to Florida, which I would be like, don't tell my wife. You know, we're going to pay you whatever, plus some equity. Would you do it? Probably consider doing it because I'm always looking for something exciting to do. Yeah. Not in love with law, like I have to practice law. I like helping people, but it doesn't have to be as a lawyer. So that, if that answers your question.
So follow-up question, does it help your business? Do you get business out of the fact that you have the podcast?
Oh, for sure. Not always directly.
Yeah.
But definitely through, you know, you'll meet somebody in 2 weeks and you'll have them call me and I'll answer their question. I just met two guys out of Texas, California that do all kinds of advanced tax planning stuff that I met because I was working on a deal with somebody and then they were on my podcast and they connected me with this person. And now I'm going to be like the rep in New Jersey that's the only attorney that does this stuff.
So yeah, I think you touched exactly on the two points. And I'm very, very similar to you in this, only I didn't have a clue about the second part. So when I started the podcast, no, really. And it was really funny. Like I started the podcast because I'm like, I wanted to create content. Why? Because I enjoy consuming content.
People tell you should do that.
No, it wasn't even that. It was like, I had the time. I left a big company. I'm like, okay, what am I going to do next?
And
I'm
like, you can just sit around, look at the wall. You're not going
to
do that.
So I'm like, what if I, you know, I have something to give, you know, I was in three different startups. I ran a big team.
Did you listen to a lot of podcasts? Yes, and you were like, you saw it was a growing medium, right?
It wasn't even this. I'm like, I'm going to write a blog.
Yeah, that's where a lot of people start, right?
And I couldn't get my mojo writing just like you. I'm like, but I'm like, you know what? I'm really good at talking to people.
Yeah.
I really enjoy talking to people. What if I start a podcast?
Yeah, that stuff you can crank out all day. How many did you do this week?
5 or 6.
Yeah, I did 3 or 4. Big week.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
You're not going to write 5 blogs in a week. I wouldn't write 5 blogs in 6 months. No way.
So here's what happened. So I'm like, we go to Israel every summer to visit family. Actually this year was the first time we did not go, which was pretty sad.
Right.
But I'm like, okay, so I'm going to record a podcast. What do I need? Like, I don't know. What do I need? I'm like, okay, I need 2 microphones because I need to record me. So I go on Amazon and look for the cheapest thing there is. And there's like a split lapel mic for $30 for the 2 microphones.
Yeah.
Like,
you can get into this business really cheap.
Like, this is awesome. Like $30, I'm in. And it connects to my DSLR camera so I can shoot video. Perfect. Even better. And do I need a light? We'll sit next to the window.
Exactly.
We'll be fine.
Right.
So we go to Israel and my dad likes photography. He's like, no, you got to have lighting. It will look horrible. Like, here's some lighting for you. So I had like my dad's lighting with tripods and everything.
Yeah, it's probably good stuff.
Made me look really professional.
I have an umbrella light right here. Probably the stuff that your dad
uses. Yeah, so I now have these. Like, those of you looking.
The ring lights?
No, they're just like, again, they're like
the square ones.
They're like a square thing with a lot of LEDs in them.
Right. I've seen those.
The brightness.
Those are good ones.
No, it's
great. You're a professional. Those are good.
For sure. But then back then, again, all I had is a $30 lapel mic. And I'm like, but it's Israel. So like half my friends are in different startups. So I can interview people for the next 3 years. Yeah,
good content.
So I go there and I'm like, what the hell do I know about interviewing people? Well, you know, you have a chat with somebody and you kind of ask them questions that are interesting to you.
Yeah.
And then I did nothing with it. Like, the interviews happened in July. I came back to Florida, started investing in different
things.
Oh,
you interviewed people over when you were in Israel?
Yeah.
Okay. How were you recording? Right to your computer?
Yeah, DSLR. No, I have a camera.
And oh, right into your thing. Okay.
Yeah. Like, again, I
no didn't, Zoom.
Know any, didn't know any better. And then I did nothing with it. And then kind of October, I'm like, yeah, I should probably do something about it. And then I really built my own website and taught myself the whole SEO and SEM. And by the way, a blessing and a curse. I knew how thing needs to run.
Right.
On a $100 million company.
Right. Yeah. That's hard to do out of your kitchen.
Only I had a 20 people team to do the stuff that I, in theory, knew how to do.
Yeah. That's what I thought you needed for a podcast. Like 20 people. You need somebody running the camera behind and people doing the editing and the marketing. Yeah.
So no, and the website and the SEO and the links and the UTMs and the social media and like all these things. So I built everything I had in the other company on my own. So it took me a while to build the whole thing. And then in January, I went live. And so I had like 6 or 7 episodes in, I went to PodFest, which is like a big conference that happens here in Florida. And again, I was clueless. Like I didn't have a clue what
is
I was
doing. Is that like Podcast Movement? That's the other big one?
Yeah. It's, I think, the second big one. And actually, they just did one, like the first one they had to do on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And we literally, now I was one of the speakers, which is pretty cool when you think about it.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
6 months ago, I was nobody. And so I was one of the speakers, and we now have this formal plaque from the Guinness Book of Records for the biggest podcasting digital conference ever.
Nice.
Yes.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSite. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSite and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
So now they're doing it, obviously, digital until we can go back
face-to-face. Yeah, of course.
But so we did that, and that really opened my eyes to like this is really a thing. Like people are making businesses out of this thing. But the funny thing, people came to me, and kind of like you, like, how are you monetizing your podcast?
I'm
like,
yeah, it's very hard.
I don't. No. And they're like, okay, what's your plan? I'm like, I don't. I just really enjoy talking to interesting people.
And I don't think it's realistic. If there's a million podcasts, Josh and Eric were telling me we passed the million mark. Yeah, most people are not going to monetize their podcasts.
I don't think it's that. I think it's, first of all, it was
900 something at one point.
No. It crossed the million.
Oh, it did.
The thing is, people that have more than 10 episodes and are still active are like 250,000.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's
which
that
is still
small.
a very, very small number.
Yeah, so you put out a podcast, you have a couple episodes, and then you stop.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. So, that makes me feel a little bit better.
No, but the other thing is, I think most people who monetize their podcasts monetize it the way you and me monetize it, which is we use it as a way to network, get to interesting people, and get business to our
content
real business.
Marketing. Yeah, it's content marketing. You know, it's funny. You know Pat Flynn?
Of course.
Right?
He was the first podcast I ever listened to.
Yeah, so me too. So I was listening to some of the business ones. Guy Raz, Built This.
Yeah, and, I love Guy Raz.
Yeah, he's grabbing, trying to get, you know, chasing him. I got his book over here. He just put out that book on, So I was listening to podcasts and in my law firm. So I had a law firm before this with 5 other partners and of counsel. And then for a lot of reasons, it wasn't making sense for me, for them, we split. So, but I was doing all the marketing to a large extent. So I wanted to do the podcasting. They didn't even think, they were like, why are we doing this? So I saw one of Pat Flynn's videos and it was like, you can start a podcast for $75. And I'm like, I can do that for $75. So I took I got USB mics, right? And we got off Amazon, you said it was like $50. You know, he had the list. So I ordered everything out. One was a lapel mic and all these different things. And I got it all in there. So it sounded horrible. And I was watching all these videos on YouTube, how to clean up Audacity with the sound and normalize it. I don't know, all this shit. And then finally, as I got more into it and I got following, and I realized that, wow, we're getting play out of this thing. Then I bought a mixing board and XLR mics and much clean. And it was like, wow, I don't have to like clean this all up again. So that was taking me like hours to clean up the sound.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and I had to get a little like USB hub because the mics, like the little laptop, couldn't power the mics. I'm not a tech guy, so but I like the toys, you know. So then,
we love
once Corona hit with the Zoom and everything. Now it's great because now it's much easier. And I don't even record on. I used to record right to the computer on Audacity. Now I just let Zoom do it.
Yeah. Of course.
So it's
yeah. A very similar story here. Like I started with Pat Flynn's free course on how to start a podcast. And I still run a USB mic,
but you consider yourself a technology guy or not really?
I am.
So that's more than,
again, I build my own website, do SEO. Yeah, do all the marketing.
I don't have a website. I've got LinkedIn, Facebook.
So I'm it's not just, I'm a tech guy. I enjoy tinkering with it. Right. I really do. So I will spend like, and I, you know, people know me as like the tools geek. Like I will find a new tool and I will spend the next two nights not sleeping, playing with it to decide if I want to use it or not.
Oh, I got to show you something then. Let me see. Where is it? Have you ever heard of Remarkable?
No.
All right. Hold on a second.
Here's another video. Thing I'm going to spend money on. I see that coming.
Yeah.
I'm going to send you an invoice, Mitch.
I'm going to turn off my background so people watching, they can see that I'm in my... Okay.
Yeah.
So Remarkable, they developed a tablet. I wouldn't be surprised if this is out of Israel, but whatever. And a stylus. And the Remarkable 2 is much better than this one, but it's a tablet that writes like paper. Ooh. So instead of having like, you know, notes all over your office, you can create like notebooks, little things. And then
you literally write on top of it.
Yeah.
And
so here's my Zoom notes,
to whatever
right?
cloud thing.
Yeah. So we're in, right. And it syncs to the cloud. So I can pick different back. So this is looks like paper, but it's just a background. Yeah. And then, you know, hi there. And you know the way tablets write, they're really terrible. It's not like that.
That's pretty awesome.
This is really
literally those of you who are not watching this and just listening, which is kind of weird to talk about something.
There's my signature. You can't sign a tablet like that.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. It looks like
all my notes are on there. Yeah.
Brilliant. So I when I did my MBA, which was 2009, I graduated. So I started in 2007. Okay. And I'm like, I'm going to not write a single word on paper.
Just going to do all electronically.
All electronic. That was kind of like my commitment. You know how people do this.
Well, this would have helped you.
30-day back-to-back workouts or drink the shake.
Right.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm nothing.
And so you were typing it?
I was typing the whole thing.
No, I couldn't. I don't think I could do that. I can type pretty fast, but not that
And
fast.
Since then, I'm not using paper for anything. Like,
well, you probably became like a super typer. Like
not just that. I've learned how to enjoy the whole cloud connectivity, searchability of all the stuff that I have. But actually what you have is kind of the best of both worlds, because I'm sure it's like OCR. It knows what you're writing and you can...
It can the new one, the Remarkable 2, can convert to... This converts it, but not that well, the new technology. But it's spectacular. It's really cool. Look at remarkable.com. You'll check
it
out.
That's pretty cool.
So let's talk about the kind of things that you're working on, because...
Yeah, that would be cool.
A lot of things going on.
Actually,
I know what I wanted to ask you before you get into that. How did you come up with the name of the podcast? I know how I came up with my name.
Ooh.
The E-Tribe.
So I own... So again, I started... I want to have a blog.
Right.
So I'm like you. I'm like the crazy entrepreneur that has crazy ideas all the time. The first thing I do is I go buy 5 domains.
Right. You want to brand it. Right. Exactly.
Well, I can't even tell you how many domains I have at this point that I'm paying for regularly, because one day maybe I will.
Yeah. I've given that up, but I used to have a lot. Yeah.
By the way, tip for listeners, and if you want, I'll put it in the notes with my affiliate link, full disclosure.
Yeah.
But no, really, it's incredible. So I used to do everything with GoDaddy, like mostly everybody else. And then I found Pork Bun. Yeah, and they have a little pork, like a little pig, as their logo.
Isn't there one called like Gator Host or something?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. But Pork Bun, they're in the US. They have great technology, amazing customer service, and they're about a third of the price of everything that I'm paying
All right. So we'll put a link in our show notes. Pork yeah, bun.
So I literally, every time like mine is about to expire and I decide to keep them, I just move them over to Pork Bun and pay a lot less than I paid before.
Obviously not a kosher Jewish organization. So
yeah.
Pork
bun. I have one of the things at a certain point that I wanted to start was an e-commerce kind of like community. And I own, what was it? ecommercecommunity.org.
Okay.
Which is a great name for an e-commerce community. and I'm like, oh, that's going to be my blog. And then I'm like, was about to start it, and I'm kind of like thinking of the content, I'm like, I'm a lot more an entrepreneurship guy and like e-commerce guy than I am, or entrepreneurship guys and strategy and stuff like that than I am e-commerce. I don't want to make it just about e-commerce.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, so entrepreneurship, what kind of, and then I'm like, okay. And then the whole podcast thing happened. I'm like, okay, I'm going to host experts and entrepreneurs and e-commerce. I'm like, oh, it all starts with an E. And then everybody was started to talk about, oh, I want to develop my tribe. I'm going to talk to my tribe. I'm like, oh, what if I just call it the E-Tribe? And the E-Tribe, all the social handles were available and, you know, the website was available. So hence it became the E-Tribe.
And it's the E-Tribe podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Okay.
Which, by the way, I'm rebranding in a few weeks.
Of course you are. So what's it going to be now?
It's going to be the Business Growth Accelerator. And the reason it's going to be the Business Growth Accelerator is, one, because nobody knows what the E-Tribe is. So if you're going through the whole thing and you're like, oh, this, like I'm going through, like, what is it? And you don't know. So Business Growth Accelerator.
Yeah, you want people to tune in, right?
You kind of know what it means. And
right.
The other thing, it's I'm relaunching the thing and I want to make a big noise about it because it's related to the business that I'm starting that you asked about. So perfect segue. Thank you for asking.
Good. I was just going to get into that and ask you what you're doing now because they were going to, yeah.
So I'm now starting a company with an amazing partner. His name is Pablo Gonzalez, which you might have also met at Podmax, but a brilliant guy. And we're starting a company called Be The Stage, in which we are creating digital platforms for existing established companies to be able to get their name brand services out there.
Okay.
And
well, that's very amazing. Broad.
We already have live clients before we even have a website, which is pretty crazy. But the website will be there hopefully by the end of this month and a lot of other things in parallel that has to happen for a company to be a company. But we already have employees and teams and processes, and we're already serving clients, and it's absolutely phenomenal.
So what's the process? What do you do for the company that you're working for?
Okay. So it all came from my epiphany. And again, Pablo's as well, coming it from a completely different direction of what I said before, if I'll find somebody that's interesting to talk to on LinkedIn and I'll send him a message and say, hey, I find you really interesting. Will you talk to me? People will show up at my door with straitjacket and take me to a padded room somewhere, right?
Right.
But if I'll write the same exact person, say, hey, I have a podcast. I want to host you as an expert. 99 out of 100 will say yes.
Right. Yeah. The guy from the one thing. I don't think he would have said yes to me if I didn't have a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, okay. So what if I have a business and I invite potential client partners and suppliers as guests of my podcast that otherwise wouldn't talk to me because I'm a nobody in the industry? They will say yes.
Right.
So that was the epiphany. And then I started looking for people who kind of doing it, and I found very, very few. I'm like, how can that be? Like, it has to work. But the few that are doing it gave me the confidence that I'm really onto something because it's working like crazy. So what we do, we create a live show for companies, a live show. In the live show, me or Pablo or somebody that we assign from the industry, because we want somebody to be educated, to be the professional host, but then somebody senior from the company, either CEO, CMO, somebody from the founder level or top executives is like the professional
co-host
And we host people, and we host three types of people. We host people who are experts in the industry, and that helps us elevate the stage, right? So we host that. We host success stories of that company. So people who have been their clients or suppliers really like working with them. And then we host their dream clients.
So you're saying you have a professional host, like, let's say you hired me, right? And then you have a guy from the company who's their senior guy. And then you bring on a guest who's going to be somebody that they're targeting as a client or a supplier they work with.
That will never talk like what to I them do. Because they're too right, small yeah. and they don't care. And
right. You're giving them a platform. You're giving them content and exposure. And
no, it's not just that. I'm so hence why we host the you know, the authority figures, because now I can say, and again, I don't know any authority figures in the business law, but I'm sure there's a couple of people, you know,
yeah, I'm
the,
sure there are.
The Pat Flynn's of that
right,
world.
Right.
And you're like, if I'll call you and say, oh, you know what? I hosted so-and-so, but I want you as an expert on something specific. Will you come on my show? I can guarantee you, you're going to say yes. And now what happens, you have an hour of a C-suite level person from one company talking to a C-suite level person on the other company on a very non-salesy environment. They're having a fun conversation like you and me.
Okay.
Now we build the questions in a way that makes the other person understand what is it that our client does. And like Eric Carbal, our joint friend from Podmax, likes to say, the magic happens when you turn off the record button. And it's always the same thing. So what is exactly that you guys do? And then you're like, okay, we do 1, 2, and 3. And he's like, oh my God, this is exactly what we need right now, which we know right, that's why course. We invited him to the show to begin with.
Of course.
So I'm kind of now removing the curtain for you so you know what's going on. And we see a crazy, crazy high closure rate from that to actual business with different partners. And then we take that content, we repurpose it across everything you can imagine. So that live show becomes a podcast and a YouTube channel and social media videos and social media audiograms and social media quote cards and all of that. And we create and manage the community for them, which then keeps on feeding the whole thing. Because once you're in the community, you know when the next live show is coming and who's going to be the guest. And you can ask questions in advance. And then we tell you, oh, we're going to ask your questions. You're going to come to the show. And so on and on. It's freaking incredible.
Well, yeah, because you're producing content and you're bringing them into the world. So I understand. So you're building basically a production / digital marketing company, and you're building a show right around that business, specifically for the business, specifically. And I guess they invite people on the show too, right? They'll tell you, well, these five companies we want to do business with. All right, yeah. Let's reach out to their CEOs.
The whole who do we invite is with complete coordination with them. We only do this with bigger companies for two reasons. One is because usually they would have a better idea on who they target, who their clients, who they have issues with, and so on. And two, because they already have some kind of a marketing department that we can coordinate with and not do 100% of the work ourselves. So we usually, people ask us like, okay, so how much time do I need to give you for you to give me that service? And usually it's 2 to 3 hours a week, because what happens is the interview itself is like an hour, and then we do 1 hour strategy, not every week. And then we do 1 hour, maybe an hour and a half coordination every week with their marketing department.
Right.
And that's it. So for 3 hours a week, they get this incredible platform that they become. And we literally, that's kind of like the tagline, become the stage of your industry. We right. make them the stage of their industry, the place people want to be at, the place we want. Oh, I really know. You and I want to be on Pat Flynn. Why? Because he's like, you know, he's the platform, or Joe Rogan or whatever. So
right.
we make them that for their industry.
No, it's a good concept. So are you using, is it, you built your own technology to do the shows? So, are you using like StreamYard or that type of stuff?
No. So we use standard commercial off the shelf. Well, our secret
like
sauce
StreamYard,
is,
something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a gazillion of them across the
Yeah, but you
process.
Put the graphics up and you got yeah, the whole yeah, thing yeah, going yeah. and yep, somebody's yep. running the show behind the scenes and the whole thing.
So our magic is our processes and our team. Right. And the knowledge of Pablo and me on how to do this to make this work. Right.
Right.
Which is, but the beauty of this is I don't have a problem sharing this. Like, you want to do this, go do this. It's just,
well, it's not a secret. I there's other people doing it. I don't know if they're doing it as well as you're doing it, but there's no way that a company in and of itself is going to do this. There's too many moving parts. There's too many things they don't know about, unless they're their own digital marketing company. But if they're in another industry, they're not going to do that.
Exactly.
Kind of stuff.
So we have, you know, a law firm, a real estate investment company, a now huge medical group. And they're not even using this to make money. They're using this to hire people they're like, we need to get the word out because we can't hire enough people because we need more people. And it's a really competitive industry right now. So we need you to help us hire people. So it's not even, the goal doesn't even have to be financial. It could, you could tailor this to whatever you want.
You mean like, just, if you're a law firm, you might bring on an attorney in another firm that's an expert in a particular field and talk to them and then say, hey, by the way, you know, we're looking for somebody. We'd love to have your department come over. Okay, you're building relationships. You're making this guy, your client, more important to the guest than he was a lot more important before he got there.
Yeah. What Pablo likes to say is you become your own chamber of commerce. You know, the chamber of commerce that throw these events and people get together and they bring an expert and they network. You become your own chamber of commerce.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Look, I told you that I'm working on a collaborative production company with other podcasters because we're all small and we don't do a lot of stuff. But if collaboratively we have 50,000 people on our mailing list and we're able to attract sponsors and we have money and that money can go towards editing and promotion and stuff like that, then, you know, and do cross collaborative episodes with each other and have a guest come in and do a circuit, that type of thing. It makes sense because we're all very small. And like you said, I don't do the podcast with any expectation that it's going to throw off a lot of money at some point. If it did, I'm sure you'd be happy about it too, but it's not, I'm not expecting it to, but it is a content marketing thought leadership type of thing. And like you said, look, if you love to write and you can just crank it out like it's no tomorrow, knock yourself out.
Yeah.
You know, if you like to do live stuff, well, I'm starting to do live stuff too.
I'll tell you the thing about writing versus the podcast, beyond the fact that it's obviously you just need to talk and it's
right. You don't have to sit there going, okay, what am I going to write now?
I think the other thing that is the biggest difference, it's just networking at scale. If you write, you're not networking, you create content. Yeah.
Right. You're not interacting with somebody. Right.
Now the other thing. So one thing is I see this as just networking at scale. And really, if you now think about the pyramid of content, the top of the pyramid is live video.
Yeah.
From live video, you can create everything else.
Sure, because you can do video podcasts and audio podcasts and the audiograms and you can transcribe it and the whole thing.
Short format, transcribe, digital, blah, everything you want out of that one piece of content. Like the Gary V's, you know, 90 pieces of content from whatever. Yeah.
And if you start with the video, you can't go up the ladder.
If you just type your podcast, your article, like, okay, you have an article. Great. You can take short snippets of it. You're done. So
I guess, yeah.
That's the other reason we do what we do the way we do this. One is really networking at scale. Two is really the whole point of like, okay, from this, we can go to 50 pieces of content from that 1 hour interview.
Right. So, and then reuse it later on when you want to revisit something or where the topic is, it's evergreen stuff.
Yeah.
No, I love it. It's a great concept. It's a great concept.
So are you making progress with kind of putting together a few people to make it into a network?
So my friend Mike Hamm, who runs the Morning Spotlight, I don't know if you know Mike, but he's coming to PodMax next Friday.
Okay.
He does a video podcast. I think he does it live and then he repurposes it. It's a roundtable discussion, one person, two people, three people. And so I've known him for a while. He's in the real estate business. He does title insurance for commercial deals. So we started talking, we're putting together kind of a white paper. I have to work on it that breaks down all the, you know, what's the USP, right? I mean, if there's no selling proposition, like, why am I doing this? I'm not going to tell people like, roll your podcast into our company. We're going to own it. I'm not doing that.
I'm just
saying, listen, let's collaborate and work together. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. I'm also looking at, I got a couple of deals I'm working on that, we're probably going to try and raise some private equity because I don't have the money to do it, but I could run the company with a couple of guys I know. One of them is an electronics company. It'll either happen or be dead by the time this podcast comes out, I'm sure. but it's interesting. It's a $10 million company with $1.5 million of EBITDA, but there's a $7 million warehouse that's part of the package. The guy's 92. So he's on his way out and he just wants some cash and stuff. So I don't know if I can move that fast, but I'm talking to a bunch of friends and we're looking at it. Cause like I said, I would do that. I would go work for a company, private equity, as long as I could still do podcasting on the side. and do that kind of stuff. I'm always looking for a new adventure. I don't have to practice law for the rest of my life.
No, for sure. I think, again, that's the most amazing thing. And for everybody who's listening and kind of like, what the hell are they talking about? Because I don't even know. The most amazing thing that happens when you, when you create content consistently, I don't care what kind of content, but
yeah,
if you create content consistently, and especially like this, just, you know, that involves other people, meaning you interview people, so many opportunities land on your lap. It's ridiculous. Like, oh, I get approached crazy on LinkedIn now several times a week to do something for somebody, getting paid to do it. And I'm like, I'm pushing most of this away because I'm in the process of starting a company and I'm investing in a few other companies and I'm on the board of, you're like,
right,
I have enough
the bandwidth
stuff
to do it. Right.
But I'm like, it's incredible. Like, the amount of opportunities I get by just the fact that I've been recording interviews consistently. And I'm not even one of those that has a marketing team and pushing it on 50 different channels or investing money on nothing. Like, I hit it live and I send emails to people on my list. And that's about it, right? Like, I would go on Facebook once a week with my outside in my backyard and talk to my phone to say, hey, there's a new episode about this and that. You maybe want to check it out. That's what I do.
Well,
and
that's the thing. The key word is consistency. Yeah. Like, people, I appeared on this podcast, nothing came of it. Or I wrote this blog, nothing came of it. I go, yeah, because that's not enough. You got to do it consistently. If you want to be a guest, I was talking this morning to a group of mine about guesting. You don't have to start a podcast.
Yeah.
Just be a guest.
Yeah.
But be a guest every week on a podcast.
Yeah.
On a video podcast, an audio podcast. So you're out there and people hear you all the time. And then when something comes up and they're like, you know what? I need a good business attorney in New Jersey. Hopefully they just heard my podcast a day ago, or they heard you and I, or you contacted them and said, oh yeah, no. Mitch is the guy. Call Mitch. Because I was out there. You go a month, don't hear from me, you'll think I died of coronavirus. I mean, this is the way it is, right? I know people. I have this deal I'm told you I'm working on. There's probably going to be some environmental work, I would guess, for this building is due diligence. I know I met a guy. Now, I know other environmental people, but I know I met a guy in the last couple of months. But because he doesn't keep in touch, didn't put me on his mailing list, doesn't put out content, I can't for the life of me remember his name.
Yeah.
But it's
and today, it happens all the time. Like, it's not just that. I know I communicated with him, but I have 5 email addresses. I have WhatsApp, I have text messages, I have LinkedIn, I have Facebook, I've got Instagram. And I'm like, there is no way.
Yeah.
If you don't remember a name or something, that you find where the conversation was.
Right. You can't. So I think consistency is huge. If you're going to start the game of promoting what it is, whatever you do, you've turned it into a business now. You gotta, your clients are going to rely on you to do consistency. If they say, yeah, let's do this once a quarter, you're going to say, well, that's not enough. That's not consistent. Nobody remembers something in 90 days. No. Once a month probably isn't enough.
No, you need this.
Once a week.
I think a good cadence is once a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we're in a very busy time where everybody's bombarding you with information. Stuff passes you, you swipe it, it goes down your feed, it's gone. So if you go a month, you know how many things have passed this person's eye?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So that's not, yeah, that's why I do it twice. I do it twice a week because I got so many episodes and people, like you said, you recorded 6 this week that I was like, oh my God, you'll come on my podcast. It'll come out in like March. That's not good. So I doubled them up and I'm still recorded out through February. January, February, something like that. And we'll release one earlier. But
I think the cool thing about this, and that's the beauty of what we do. I recorded 6 this week because I want to open a gap of not recording so I can focus
on
the business.
Yeah, gives you a breather.
So you can, the beauty of content creation is that you can batch it.
Yeah.
Like, there's people who record one day a month, day a month.
They do all day.
And they start at 8 a.m. and they finish at 5 p.m. And God bless them. If I have to do more than 2 interviews a day, I'm dead.
Yeah, me too.
But that's what they do. They do every 45 minutes, 15 minutes of water and snack, and they do the other one. So they do 8 in a day or 6, and then they give it to a team and the team produces it and they have a content for a month and a half.
Right, it's all scheduled.
Then they don't have to do it for a month and a half. And it's
phenomenal. I don't find that's the case. I find I'm meeting people all the time. You're referring me people. I'm referring people around. They just end up on my calendar. I've relegated to Mondays and Fridays so I can actually get work done during the week and network with people and get client, legal work done and get paid. But beyond that, I just let it fill up.
No, so, but it's purely a personal decision, right? You can open your Calendly for that type of meeting only on the first 2 days of the month.
One day, right. We record, you know, the third Monday of every month.
Yeah.
You could do it that way if you're that busy.
So I think, again, it's if I have to kind of like the key message out of all of this past hour, which was really interesting.
Yeah, it went very fast.
Is produce content, produce good content by interacting with relevant people.
Yeah.
And do
be
it consistent
about it. Yeah. Be consistent. That's what I'm saying.
And literally magic happens.
Yeah.
Magic. Like Mitch or I are not marketing gurus. We're not spending all our time on social media. We both have other things that we do and that we focus on. And yet the amount of opportunities, the amount of doors, the amount of business that we get because we've been consistent in publishing content is out of this world. Really, yeah, I don't know.
But it's not magic, though. It's the fact that you are playing in traffic a lot and you get hit. That's what happens, you know? So, I mean, it's really, there's no magic to it. The magic is you and I go and we buy a two-family house. We have one house. We have a terrible experience. We have to throw two tenants out, have to plumb toilets out in the middle of the night. And we're like, real estate sucks. I'm never going to own real estate. This is terrible. And you say to them, that's your example, one house that you've owned.
Yeah,
the same thing. Like people put out a blog, they make one appearance and they're like, well, this doesn't work. I mean, I didn't get any business out of it. Of course you don't. Nobody knows who the hell you are. Yeah. Consistency is huge. And you're right. Let's call it magic. It's because it's out there all the time. And people repost, you know, it's still floating out there. You know that. I get reactions to posts. I'm like, oh, somebody reacted to my post today. And I look at it. It's from like 4 weeks ago, a different post.
I'll tell you one last funny thing. And then I guess I'll let you go because it's a Friday afternoon, Shabbat. We both have to do our thing. But every now and then when I have something really important, I will do a solo episode. I think I've done.
I haven't done four. That yet, but yeah.
I think I've done four.
Okay.
The first one that I've done, I hated it.
Yeah.
Because I'm happy and like energetic even on a 5 p.m. on a Friday afternoon after a long week with many episodes. That's who I am. When I'm all alone in front of a microphone, I'm like,
me too. Total
I'm a lot dead. Less excited.
Yeah.
So I did the thing and I'm like,
how
I
long? Like for an hour?
Probably 35 minutes.
That's a lot.
And I'm like, should I post it? Shouldn't I post it?
Right.
Like, I don't know. I'm not sure about how it came out. And we always have our doubts, right? And it was
right.
Actually
you just
got to
post it, right?
It was very, I'm like, you know, screw that. I'm like, I'm posting it.
Yeah.
I got more speaking gigs out of that one episode than any other that I've done.
You know, it's funny you say that. I don't like to talk that much, but I started doing a live stream, well, it was twice a week. Then I thought coronavirus would be over by the end of May and it wasn't. So now Thursday mornings, 10:30, I do 15 minutes and I get a lot of play on that because it's always something I'm talking about the law or I'm talking about marketing or something that I did or something a client brought up or something I had problems with. That's definitely got a lot of play, but I'm the same way. I don't want to.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.